Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs, and it is February 1st, 2022. And we got a great show for you right now with a great friend of ours. That'll be Phyllis Wolfram, who's the executive director of CASE, the Council of Administrators in Special Education. We're going to talk about special education leadership in 2022. So it's important for all teachers. So many of the kids are mainstreamed, of course, special ed teachers, special ed administrators, and school administrators. Very, very important as budget priorities come into effect and all that sort of thing and how things are reported. It's really, really important. So it's going to be a nice show. We're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. That's our Consortium for Equity in Education. We're the voice of equity and access and social-emotional learning over here. We have our new website, seltoday.org, and the sites are linked, ace-ed.org and seltoday.org. And our magazine, we'll have a new issue coming out probably the end of this week, which is called Equity and Access, our wonderful, if I may, online journal. That's over at ace-ed.org, so please enjoy it. Okay, enjoy everything we do over there. These are crazy times. We're trying to get all the best information out there. We do have a newsletter on our ace-ed site, so please check it all out. So without further ado, let me bring on the one and only Phyllis Wolfram. Hi, Phil. It's Larry.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, I'm good. How are you? We got a lot of snow on Saturday. How's snow in Missouri today?
It is 60 degrees in Missouri today, and by tomorrow morning we're going to have ice, and the next day 6 to 12 inches of snow.
Wow.
So
wow.
It's going to change drastically in the next 24 hours.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking out at piles of snow. We had that big snowstorm on Saturday, but no electricity problems here in rural Maine, I'm happy to say. I wish you good luck over the next couple of days with your storm.
I hope we fare very well.
You can make a snow angel, Phyllis. You can make a snow angel.
I'll take a picture and send it to you.
Thank you. I will appreciate that. Okay. And you, as I always say to you, all special ed people go to heaven. So angel is the appropriate thing to do in the snow.
Well, thank you very much. And
You're very welcome, Phyllis.
I tend to agree with that, especially during some of the times that we're living in.
Brother.
Our special education staff is working very, very hard and under very, very difficult situations at times.
I would say that's usually the case in the best of times, that they work very, very hard under difficult situations, and it's just nuttier and nuttier and nuttier. And actually, that said, you know, with all the nutsiness that's out there right now, how's that affecting the social emotional aspects and just the teaching in general within special ed, all the craziness you hear?
I think teachers are trying to, and administrators, navigate. I think the expectation is that they're the end-all, be-all for students and sometimes families and sometimes businesses as people are trying to get back to work. And I don't know that it's a perfect solution, but I think a recognition that, our teachers who are dealing with classrooms full of students, some which they're teaching virtually and in person at the same time, and they're having to shift back and forth. We've seen a surge in certain areas of the country just in the last month and the last couple of weeks. We know that schools have, at least in our area here in the Midwest, a few have shut down and they've gone back to virtual, mainly because they don't have the staff. They can't. I've been on calls with local directors, and about a month ago, they were starting to see the staff shortage because of illness or the impact of COVID on school staff. They didn't have teachers to teach in classrooms. Teachers were working on their planning period, and then when that wasn't working, students, especially at the secondary level, were chaperoned to the gym. And that's where school was happening because the staff just wasn't there to teach. So we have our fair share of issues right now. I think some of the political environment continues to weigh heavy on our superintendents across the nation. The issue of masking still continues to be a political issue and burdensome to school districts. So we're still in the heart of the pandemic public education and all education is concerned, I believe.
Yeah, and I don't know when it's going to get better. I hope it does soon. Okay, and you know, herding all the kids to the gym, it gives them, I guess, what you might call seat time, but they're not learning. It's not good days of learning.
Yeah.
And it's really bad. And on that note, okay, I must ask, with all the, I'm going to call it the notoriety, with that people are hearing about education these days, it's always been difficult, if I may, to find the right kind of person to become a special ed teacher. And that is the right kind of person, more so almost than any other type of teacher. All right. And I am curious, okay, how we're doing and what you see getting new people into the field, okay, so that we don't have a shortage of what you already have. Is it going to get worse? How do we handle all that? This terrible teacher shortage, and I think it's going to get worse.
Okay, Larry, so here it comes. I have a great solution.
I hope so.
And you might think this is kind of out there, but I truly believe, well first let me bring it down just a notch before I go way out there. One of the things that we are doing as an organization, we have been asked to partner with the Council for Exceptional Children, along with there are about 8 other organizations. We're coming together. We're looking at the attract, prepare, and retain information that was developed by the Office of Special Education Programs when our dear friend Lori Vanderplug was the director of OSA.
Yep.
Yeah, and so we're using those guides that she developed with her staff at that point in time, and we're developing some webinars. I believe the first one, Lori is really taking the lead with this group, and we will see some webinars start to roll out the end of February that will be free to the nation as we try to assist and provide some information to the field on some things that they could do. There are some districts that are already doing a number of these, but as we know, the turnover in staff and small districts, we hope that it will be some good resources for everyone to take a look at. So that's in the works. We're trying to do our part. As we know, what we have to do is fill the pipeline. Of those young people or even maybe not so young people who would be interested in going in the field of education. So here's my big, what I believe could happen.
Yes.
I do believe that the federal government has an investment in this. We have a federal mandate called the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And that's a mandated law across the nation as we receive federal funds, very few federal funds, but be as it may, we do receive money to educate students with disabilities. So I believe that some of the money that's coming into the federal government, that there should be this national campaign of how great it is to be a special ed teacher. And I think we ought to tap into some of those great teachers that we have across the nation and let them show the work that they're doing and how cool it is and how fun it is and how rewarding it is to be a teacher, and especially a special ed teacher. So I'm throwing that challenge out to anybody who might be listening at the U.S. Department of Education that we need a national campaign. We need somebody to step up and lead that charge. There's lots of money flowing through the federal government right now, lots of money that's put into technical assistance centers across the nation. I know they could find some to help us out. So that's my big wow. I think we need this national campaign.
We do.
Of how cool it is to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm. We do. In this case, we're talking about particularly special ed teachers, which there's always a shortage of. It's a very rewarding profession, okay? An incredibly rewarding thing. And, you know, you're right. The feds do have skin in the game, so to speak, all right? And, you know, one of the things we can do, and it might even be a kind of a short-term solution, is over the next 10 years, say, where these we will pay your student loans if you go into one of these fields, I'm going to say, for 10 years or something. Okay? Mm-hmm. And to anybody who's young, okay, unlike me, all right, if you do that from the age of 22 and 32, you're doing a great service to the country at a minimum. Okay? And once you're 32, if you do decide to leave, your whole life's ahead of you.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And, you know, and I know it doesn't seem that way when you're young, but it is true. And if we can take that those federal dollars and some state dollars as well, wherever that might be, and throw that into paying back student loans for occupations that we need, and there are others as well. It's an investment in the future of the country. It's what you're saying, and we're in agreement, kiddo. We're in agreement.
I think so. I think we should. I think our two solutions here should go forward. I think we need to challenge some people to get in to have a skin in the game. And I agree with you that it is a state and a local investment that needs to be partnered with as well. But I really look sometimes to the U.S. Department of Education, the Office of Special Education Programs, to challenge them to say, you know, as you lead in the nation, this has got to be a national effort that benefits everyone. And what would that look like? So I really think there's some there could be some teeth into that as we move forward and challenge people. And the thing about going into education right now as a young teacher even is the resources, Larry, that are available. And as I get deeper into my position, which is almost 2 years now, I have learned about more and more resources that are available to teachers. And I am working really hard to put those resources out there for our school leaders to take advantage of and to look at and what fits your need in your school district, what fits your need within a particular classroom, the curriculum that is available, the technology and the song and dance you can do with some of the technology that is available, just remarkable.
It truly is. And you know, I just did a show with COSH, the Consortium of School Networking. The technology out there is remarkable, but it's also commonplace now. And my standing joke is, you know, we always say the term education technology. All right? Mm-hmm. We don't have to say that anymore. Okay, and technology is basically education. It's used everywhere,
right?
And if it's not being used, we never said education talk. Technology is just a tool, and that's where it is right now. And we got to harness that technology to make it work, so that if there is a continuing teacher shortage, we use the technology to make up for that in some way. Okay, and that's a STEM thing. And it brings kids back into that. I mean, we've got so much to talk about and so much to do here, and it's just – we just got to get on it and make it happen. And we're always talking about it. We never do anything, not you and me, but everybody else in the world, okay?
Exactly.
You and I are pretty good at this, all right?
Yeah.
But it's just nutty. We can't let this keep going on a downward spiral like this.
Right.
It has to come back up. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I would also say, you know, along with teachers, you know, when we talk about that campaign to bring people into the field, you know, we also need all of those specialized instructional support personnel, our occupational therapists. When you think about occupational therapists assist our students in accessing their environment, some of those occupational therapists are experts with technology and augmentative communication and all that's needed for our students with more severe disabilities. Our physical therapists along with them, our speech language pathologists, we just need a nice shot in the arm of a whole bunch of all of those individuals walking into education, and we need to make it attractive. And I think that your idea about, you know, forgiving student loans after so many years of service is what we have to do, because now we know to go to school to be an occupational therapist is very expensive. To be a physical therapist in our schools today, it requires a doctorate level. So we have to do something to bring those experts into the field of education. And I think you got a great idea there about the loan forgiveness. I think that would really attract some of the more highly qualified instruction support personnel that we need.
Mm-hmm. It's fairly obvious. We just got to have a little push behind it to make it work. Hold on one second. Had to clear my throat for a second. I wanted to change the subject for a second. We're on February 1st. Anything going on with CASE starting, like, say, 9 days from now?
Yes, we have a
great... What could that be?
It is the winter workshop that we're doing.
Oh, my.
It used to be our hybrid. We've gone totally virtual. We had a very successful virtual conference last year. We're sticking with that success and hopefully building on it. And
you mean Little February, Rock? Do you mean what you did in Little Rock?
That was November. No.
Yeah,
no.
Okay.
In February a year ago.
Oh, okay. Last year's winter workshop. I got mixed up on what you were saying. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. But in just 9 days, we're doing our winter workshop again. And the first day is an opportunity to learn. We've opened it up to the companies that have worked with CASE. If they were on our mailing list, they got an invitation to provide a workshop. And it's share your resources to anybody that wants to come. We're posted on our website. If you're looking for a particular resource or product or service that you need in your district, I would really encourage people to check it out. You can pop in and out of meetings as much as you want on that first day. The second day, we're having Dr. Adam Sines, and he is a licensed psychologist, and we're going to be talking about wellness, teacher wellness, and tools that administrators and school leaders can use if you in turn are having to provide professional learning, or you just need some tools to manage what's happening in your district with regard to wellness and behavioral health for adults. That was our focus. That focus came from our members when we said, what is it that you need more of? They really want their teachers to be healthy, emotionally, behaviorally, mentally. And so that's our focus for the day. And he is an extraordinary speaker. He has a virtual studio in his office, or I don't know if it's his office or his home, but it's just, I think it's going to be a great experience, something we've never put on to this level before. So we're very excited to bring him in. And then the last day we're having...
Can I just say something on that for a second? Okay,
sure,
this is
absolutely
key to me. Okay. This is going to be on Thursday. Phyllis just described is going to be on Thursday, February 10th. Okay, and it's 9:30 to 4. I'm looking at the website here. And it's called Beyond the Pandemic. And this is a key phrase. Adult SEL as a roadmap to wholeness. And I know you know that we do our SELtoday.org website. Okay. It's just amazing. And I found amazing what you just said, all right, is that when you ask the teachers what do they need the most, they said, we need some help getting through this. We need some help. These are special ed teachers, and they care about their kids first, believe me. All right? But to get the kids to where they need to be, the adult SEL is so important. I don't want people to forget that social-emotional, I'll call it social-emotional learning, but social-emotional work for the educators these days, especially with all the outside political pressures, the economic pressures, et cetera, is really key. So I hope a lot of people do go over here. Okay, and this is going to be next week at the Winter Workshop for CASE on Thursday. Before we get into Friday's activities, I just want to know one thing. Where do people just tell everybody how they can register for all this?
They can go to Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
You can register online at the CACE website. It's CACEC.org, real easy to find, or you can just search for Council of Administrators of Special Education and we'll pop up. But if you go to our events tab, you'll see Winter Workshop, and you can scroll down and see the offerings and register right on the website at CACEC.org. And it's open to anybody and everybody that would like to attend.
And they should, and it's virtual. It's virtual. So please.
Yep, and it's going to be available for 2 weeks afterwards. All of our presenters have consent. If you're registered and you maybe miss a session, you can go back and watch it, or you can watch it multiple times because it's going to be so good and you'll have a great takeaway each time you watch it. So, that's that will be available as well, the recordings for those that register.
And just as an analogy to that, they always tell you when you're on the plane, if you're flying with a child, if those air masks fall down, put yours on first. Okay,
that's
and that's what this SEL day two is about. Okay, taking care of yourself so you can really help your kids. Power of SEL, adult SEL is a roadmap to wholeness with Dr. Adam Sainz. Sainz? How do you pronounce his last name?
Sainz.
Thank you.
Sands, but it's signs. Yes.
Signs. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. Onward to day three of the winter workshop. Okay. And looks to me like it's going to be a little more legal. What is it?
Yeah. In some respects, we're going to start off just talking about maybe from that legal perspective. Miriam Friedman is an attorney who's been in the field for a long time, worked with schools and parents throughout. So our focus is on, you know, building trust. It takes little small steps and you'll have a big impact. She has written several books on fixing special education, and communication is the key. And we know, and we've said since March of 2020 when we entered school closures for the first time of the pandemic, the importance of communicating with families consistently and checking in and opening those doors to what it is you can do, what it is you have the ability to do for education, virtual. And, you know, we still struggle with that with the quarantines and the social distancing and the things that teachers have to deal with. But communication is key. And so Miriam's going to walk through some easy steps that would be great takeaways, especially if you're an administrator and you are working with your staff. I think you will find this presentation very beneficial. It would be a ready-made presentation for you to take back to your teachers in your school district to help assist them in understanding the importance of those key steps in communicating effectively through IEP meetings. So that's going to be Miriam, and we're very excited to host her and have her be with us. Yeah.
And then day three continues. I know Kevin certainly. I don't think I know the other two people, Aaron and Myrna, but Kevin Rubenstein's going to be there. A case expert panel. Talk about that. What's that going to be about? Navigating the law.
Yeah,
I guess.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does, and that the whole issue of compensatory services. Which is just guidance that's been put out by OSEP, but we just want to reiterate that we have to continue to look at the guidance that OSEP's putting out, what's required by law, and the best steps for doing that. We have an Erin McGuire, who's from Vermont. She's our case president, and Kevin Rubenstein, who's in Illinois, he's our policy and legislation chair. They are local directors, so they're on the front lines dealing with it. And Myrna, who's our policy consultant out of D.C. But what they're gonna talk about is, first and foremost, what is the most important aspect in dealing with requests for compensatory education is looking at that requirement to provide a free and appropriate public education. And first and foremost, you need to be looking at your data to see where your students are functioning. You have to, we've said over and over again, a number of our students are going to require more every time you do that annual review and you're looking at the progress that students have made, sometimes lack of progress, we need to be prepared to offer in IEP meetings exactly what students need to move forward and to progress. We also want to very clearly not set ourselves up for failure with this whole idea of compensatory services. There's no way that school districts can go back and make up hour for hour all that's been missed because of the pandemic. We've said that over and over and over again. So we feel it's really important that we talk about recovery services versus compensating for the time that's been lost, because you can't make up time. But you can make up is instruction. And we need to be providing instruction that students need in order to continue to make that progress. So we hope that we're giving some good guidance to the field so that they can navigate some of those maybe more difficult IEP meetings where they're struggling, and offer some suggestions for moving forward and how to navigate that. So some of that, yes, it could be a little heavily legal, but we know that's what some of our administrators, a good portion of our administrators, are dealing with, and how to help them get over that, and the conversations and the language and how important that is when they're working in our schools, with our families, with our students, and with other administrators and teachers as well.
Phil, I don't know the answer to this, because I don't know enough about special education, though I talk to you a lot. I'm certainly far from an expert in it, all right? But I'm curious, you know, over the pandemic time, we talk about learning loss for all the kids, but I've always said don't mix up learning loss with curriculum loss. The kids are learning, okay, but we maybe didn't cover the entire curriculum, but let's assume many of the kids did learn. But I'm curious how that impacts a special education student. Okay, because what they need to learn, and again, I need your help on this, might be different, I believe it is, from what a typical student, to use a poorly weighted, an average student might need. What's the learning loss, if there was any, regarding special education students, as opposed to the standard student, if I may, which is a terrible way to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe your typical developing student.
I think the
number one way to look at it is we haven't always lost learning. What we really lost was instructional time. We lost instructional time throughout every school in the nation, regardless of whether you were a public school, a charter school, a private school. We just lost time. And so it's incumbent upon us then to go back and look at individual students and to see where students are functioning. We can't make up for every bit of instructional time that was lost, but what we can do is provide services to meet the individual needs of students. And what we know is students whose disability, the nature and severity of the disability, might be more than their peer, we would have to, I think we need to provide more services for those students. But then let me also say this. We know that, 80% of students with disabilities spend the majority of their time in a general education classroom. So a number of those students are typically developing, and they may need a little bit more, or maybe they flourished during the pandemic. They worked individually. They worked at their own pace. And some of those students continue to make progress and may not need as much additional services as their peer. It requires us to look individually at each student's need to determine what instruction we need to provide them in order to get them back to the place they were pre-pandemic. And that's been our conversation all along with when we've done webinars, when we've put a guidance or support out to the field of special education leaders.
Great. Phil, that was well said, I'll tell you. And we got the more we need to individualize, the more teachers we need. And it's a vicious cycle. I'm going to get back to the beginning of this conversation. We got to do something about this teacher shortage, in special ed in this case particular. Good.
Because we know a number of our students where the nature and severity of their disability is much more complicated. They do need more services.
They do
need more specialized instructional support, from maybe occupational therapists, physical therapists, speech language therapists. But we're in a terrible catch-22. We can't seem to we don't have that staff to provide more. And so the frustrating part when the U.S. Department of Ed continues to say, well, you've got to offer compensatory services. How can we possibly do that when we don't have the staff? It really is putting our school districts in a bind and in a tough situation. And we need them to partner with us more than go against what we believe is the most important, which is the language that we use in our IEP meetings and in our schools. So I could probably talk continuously about that over and over, Larry, and sound like
a
broken record.
No, you don't. You don't sound like a broken record at all, because it is a broken record. Okay? If I may use that term, it is a broken record we're talking about. Okay? And it's absolutely ridiculous. This has been the problem for years that the feds, I assume with good intentions, can create these mandates. And then we'll go figure out how to make it happen. Okay, so good luck. Teach your cat to floss its own teeth. Okay, it's hard to do. You can't do that. Okay, it's just ridiculous. So I don't know where it's all going to end, but I'm hoping 2022 we learn something from this pandemic. Okay, and I'll tell you, I'm going to say it again. People need to go to your winter workshop. Special educated administrators and teachers, whoever, they need to help themselves and get things going, and it's good. So casecec.org, and it starts on February 9th. Thank you, Phyllis. You're always, as always, you're wonderful. And I'm sorry about
the
Chiefs. I'm sure that you were upset about the Chiefs.
Oh, my. It was such a heartbreak. Yes. We just love
I'm sorry. Do you Missouri? Yes.
I know. Anyway, next
I know.
Year.
Either that or they'll replace the case executive director with someone from Ohio. That would be the other way to handle this disappointment. Cincinnati, get it? It's a joke. You're not going to be replaced. You're too wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
All right. Enjoy the Super Bowl anyway. All right? Thanks, Phil. This was just great. I appreciate it. Thank you. I know you're busy, so we really appreciate it. You take care. Thanks.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye. Phyllis Wolfram, everybody. Missouri-based executive director of CASE, the Council of Administrators of Special Education. And there you have it, okay? You may gloat now, Cincinnatians. All right, we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org and also check out seltoday.org. All right, I'm Larry Jacobs. Hey, thanks for listening.